Kia ora, I'm Rochelle Stewart-Allen.
And I'm Tui Hana Oihia.
And welcome to the Tātou Tātou podcast. Kaitiaki kōrero about well-being and hauora.
In today's episode, we are talking with Demete Lohmann from Western Initiative. Welcome, Demete.
Tēnā tātou, tātou. Ko Demete Lohmann tōku ingoa. He uri whakaheke au. Nō ngā pūmanawa e waru o Te Arawa. He hononga ki roto Ngāti Uenuku Kōpako, Ngāti Rangiti, Ngāti Te Roro Te Rangi. He hononga anō hoki ki roto Ngāti Kahungunu, ki raro i te maru, Ngāi Tama Te Rangi, ki te marae o Rangi Āhua, haere tonu aku atu, ki te puku o Te Ika, ki roto Ngāti Raukawa, ki raro i te maru o Ngāti Wairangi, ki te marae o Mōkai.
Lovely to have you with us. You know, we're here today to interview community leaders. We were talking before about how a lot of our community leaders were in roles of serving, you know, giving back to others and roles of servitude or serving others. And more often than not, we kind of forget ourselves within that space because we have these high empathy kind of spaces and we just want to give. And we kind of forget about koi. One of the questions we wanted to ask is, you know, and this is going straight into it, what are the sorts of hauora challenges you have seen in your career?
Probably the first challenge is viewing yourself as a community leader, which is always a really tough pill to swallow. I see myself as a community enabler. And if other people want to call me a leader, kei a rātou tēnā. It's pretty rare that I'll introduce myself as a community leader. But when other people are putting labels like that on me or others, I think that's where a lot of the challenge begins, because there's a certain expectations placed upon you extrinsically. But then the real challenge starts when the expectations come from an intrinsic place, so that, you know, the expectations you place on yourself. You know, if people are going to call me a leader, then I must be X, Y, Z. That's an internal taniwha that can catch you off guard when you least expect it. Probably the biggest challenge that I've seen for myself and for others who serve, particularly Māori communities, is the taha wairua. You know, we're really good at, or we're getting better at recognizing the physical challenges. You know, the really acute impacts of carrying the weight of a community, of a kaupapa, carrying the weight of the trauma that our people have. I'm getting emotional already.
That's
only
okay.
2 minutes in. And
it's in the heart, right? Yeah. So when you feel it, I think, in the heart, there is that immense intensity that you feel as an individual for that, as well as for the people. You actually feel it for yourself because you feel that, that right there.
And you can't, you know, what I've experienced is when you carry those things, you can't just leave them at mahi. You can't just leave them in the community. Oh, aro mai.
I think, you're both going. I think it's, and brother, I don't want to speak for you, but I'll just speak. You know, when you are kind of sometimes placed as being a leader of a kaupapa or a company or whatever it is that you are, being seen to be leading, we kind of carry a bit of a taumaha of our tūpuna that have come before us and all that they've really fought for, and how, as Māori, we have to fight so much harder, you know, to have our voice heard. And then, you know, and I mean, in every one of our whānau, we've got our own whānau that are being challenged on a daily. I mean, if I look at you and I, you know, I can honestly say I've been fair enough, as in my skin tone, to fly under the radar. Which is a terrible way to say it, but there's kind of a more of an acceptance because you're slim and you look like that. So you look more like they would like you to be seen, let's say. And I think that, you know, being in the community, being in our community, serving our communities, we're just consciously aware of the expectation of our tūpuna, of wanting to do as much as we can while we're here in order to leave those legacies for the generations to come.
Mm.
It's kind of an additional layer. I don't want to call it a pressure, but it's an additional layer that we have.
Mm.
And so therefore, why we want to put ourselves first and why we want to look after our holder, we tend to go, oh, that can really wait because we actually really need to serve them. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah. I think, I mean, there's an element in the past year or two, you know, there's been some social media posts around a group of Māori who, not themselves, but others, and sometimes if it's even our own people, they say they're the elitist.
Mm.
Those are the elitist Māori. They don't have the same trauma as me. Yeah, and like you said, I'm fair-skinned and I fly under the radar, but I have my own trauma.
Yes.
That comes with being a fair-skinned Māori.
Aye.
You know, where I could, not me, but here's a story. My middle boy, and we went and watched his older brother at the Kapahaka regionals. And in between, you know, the MCs come out and run little games or competitions, you know, between the breaks. And they said, oh, we're going to have a haka off. And so my boy was, oh, he would have been maybe 5 or 6. Same thing, fair skin, blonde hair, blue eyes. Kōrero Māori, you know, came through kōhanga reo. And he goes, Papa, birangi utu haere atu. So he ran up to the stage and there was him. And then there were 3 other tamariki, brown skin, brown hair, brown eyes. And he was at the end of the line. And the MCs came through, awesome young Māori men. So, and they went to the first tamaiti. Oh, kia ora bro, ko waito ingoa. And tarara, no hea koe. Tarara, oh man. Went to the second one. Kia ora bro, ko waito ingoa. No hea koe. Tarara, that man. Went to the third one. Kia ora bro, no hea koe. You know, ko waito ingoa. Tarara. Came to my son. Hey little bro, what's your name? And I was like, what the heck? You know, and so I've experienced different trauma, but coming back to this sort of elitist Māori tag that gets placed on, and you know, I'll openly admit I'm super privileged as a Māori when we think about all of the negative statistics that Māori occupy, which is just about every single one of the core social building blocks of society. I'm at the opposite end of the scale.
Mm.
And I know that I have that privilege, but for me, and I'm pretty confident it's for all of those others who society wants to label as elitist or separatist, you know, they carry that same taumaha as well. They carry that weight that because we have this privilege, we have even more of a desire and a willingness to give back and to change the system. And we carry that, you know, so when I'm serving those communities, I'm like, I have to do this. I have to. That those are the sacrifices, yeah, that our tūpuna made, that my parents made, you know. Kohanga reo had only been going for a couple of years when I started. There was no data around whether that was a good educational choice or not. And my parents took that leap of faith to put us into kohanga reo and then into Māori medium education through kura kaupapa and whare kura. And I'll forever be grateful that that they took that risk. I have an obligation now. That's how I feel. I have an obligation now to repay that sacrifice by giving as much as I can give to the hundreds of thousands of Māori who don't have those things. And we talk about hauora or waiora or well-being, and I know that lots of my strength comes from all of those things, comes from my reo, comes from my ahurea, my culture, my tuakiri, my identity, my connection to place, my connection to people. And it's just, it's bullshit. It's bullshit that not all of our people have that, and they deserve it. They deserve it.
It's reminding me of, in series 2, we talked to Fole, who you know, obviously, to Eden as well. And we talked about this, about that sense of commitment of where you've come from and looking forward, that sense of commitment for the people who haven't had the same opportunities as you.
Mm.
And that kind of weight or responsibility or however it's described, So I'm interested to hear from you about how you manage that. Like, how does that sit with you? How do you find that space to rejuvenate amongst that kind of sense of responsibility of going forward and the mahi that you need and want to do for others?
That's a good question. I think I'm still on that journey. I guess the fact that I couldn't get through 3 minutes of this podcast without breaking down, and that breakdown was thinking about the individuals, the whānau, the communities that I've served, the stories that they've shared with me, you know, the disclosures that they've made, however you want to take that word. I think the fact that I couldn't get through 3 minutes probably highlights that I'm still on a journey of how I keep myself well. But I do know that it's about me leaning more and more into what I know or what's been normalized for me. And that sometimes is the challenge for me because a Māori way of knowing, being and doing is so normal for me, sometimes I can't overtly highlight the opportunities to lean into those things. Oh, well, that's just normal. That's just normal. And sometimes you don't know what you don't know until someone else maybe puts something in front of you and say, hey, have you thought about doing karakia? Oh, yeah, true. You know, that's a really good idea. Why don't I think of that? And sometimes I feel that we don't think about it because it's just a normal, it's just a normal part of our life.
We don't see what's in front of us, right, often.
It's an interesting and ongoing journey where I get to lean into some of those things. You know, getting back in touch with the taiao, you know, growing up, I was born in Kawakawa. My parents ran the school in the bush in Waikare. And so my pito was buried up there. I don't have any whakapapa honunga. My pito was buried there, and my whenua is buried under a tree that was planted at Rangiahua, which is one of my marae between Wairo and Waikare Moana. But, you know, I remember, you know, swimming in the awa and picking blackberries with the community and going eeling and, you know, chasing pātiki with a spike and doing all those things in the taiao. And we know that the taiao is the genesis of well-being. Mm-hmm. It's the genesis of hauora or waiora. You know, we think about deities like Tāne te waiora, you know, who brought light. And we know how healing light is, particularly sunlight, not necessarily the light in this room, but sunlight, natural light. There's a whole lot of clues and a whole lot of answers in those narratives that I guess I'm, as I'm going on my journey, is trying to explicitly lean into those things. There's a whole lot of collateral out there now, right? Lots of it doesn't come from Te Ao Māori. It still resonates, you know, how many podcasts are there? How many audio books are there? How many well-being programs are there? You can sign up to these $1,000 a day coaching sessions with all, you know, Tony Robbins, there's the man. Let's listen to all of his stuff. And Paitera, and I do listen to all of that stuff. But it's really drawing on the synergies between what they're saying and what my tūpuna knew and understood in the way that they conceptualized the world and their connection to it. And, yeah, I mean, you know, you think about stories like Tāne, you know, the three baskets of knowledge. Lots of people know about that. What I found is not a lot of people know about the additional kohatū Māori that came with those baskets. So there was two kohatū Māori, whatukura hukaatai and whatukura rehutai. And so he brought those baskets back down, and the toka were said to hold the mana or the Māori of that knowledge. So he couldn't really access the knowledge without these kohatū, and he brought them all back down. He buried them and lit a big fire too, because Fido was after him, eh? His older brother was like, you know, should be me getting those. And he wasn't very happy with them, so he lit this big fire. And the fire was named Manawaora. So even if you think about the word Manawaora, you know, the living, thriving heart. So he lit this fire called Manawaora to protect it, to protect these taonga. So all of these things that we think, that's a myth and that's random, but it's not random. Mm. Yeah, there's answers in there in terms of how we can be well and how we can contribute to our hauora, our waiora.
Because I feel like, you know, in this modern world, we're often looking elsewhere for answers, you know, like over there, over here, over there, under there, up there. We're looking for answers when really, like, our answers are here.
Mm.
Our answers are often within, because the Taiao will tell us.
Mm.
It tells us so much. You know, Hina, the Maramataka tells us so much. And I think that we've lost, not lost, but we've got, you know, and consumed by the busyness of everything, that we've forgotten, or, you know, there's definitely a massive resurgence of going back to those ways, because the answers are actually right here.
Mm.
I get really ho-ha, really ho-ha with this constant.
I mean, you don't need $1,000 a day.
No, you don't need
to, like, sign up to some fancy course.
It's so bullshit. And then what I also get really annoyed with is how sometimes whānau, I need to be careful what I say here, whānau take concepts of other cultures and then westernize them and then make them their own without acknowledging the true whakapapa of where they've come from. So I, like, intrinsically, I believe that I don't need a this and a that because actually if I turn back or look back or turn to the wisdom of our tūpuna and all that we know as people, as being Māori, the answers are actually there.
Mm.
You know, the tohu are given to us.
Mm.
And if you, and we all know what happens if you don't listen to a tohu, right? So there's all of that.
Mm.
So, I think that sometimes we've made well-being almost like a money-making space when it shouldn't be a money-making space.
Mm.
And an external thing.
Yeah.
That it sits outside us.
Yeah.
That we have to sort of try to access it and search for it and find it as opposed to it's already here and we just have to sit in it, right?
Yeah, I love, we're not filming this so no one can see, but I wish we were, because your tinana never lies, eh?
Yeah.
Your body language and just there how you said, you know, we have to sit with it, and the fact that you went like this, you know, and it connects back to, I guess what was taught to me is, in the original whare wānanga, you know, you're sitting in the dark, and in those days you sort of were chosen, and not everyone got to just enroll and pay their fees and turn up. Tawira or learners would be given small stones by the tohunga, and they'd have to swallow them, and they'd sit here in their puku, and that would be a representation of those toka Māori that Tāne Nui Arangi brought back, and that was the only way they were actually going to be able to access the knowledge that was about to be presented to them. And so from that, again, what's been shared with me and my upbringing is that's where our feelings sit for Māori, in the puku.
Puku. Mm.
You know, so not in the heart and not in the head.
Mm.
And then you think about all these well-being things. I haven't heard Tony Robbins and any of his podcasts or any of those famous guys talk about, you know, they don't talk about your puku.
No.
They talk about your head and your heart and the things, the way that you think. And they work, you know, positive affirmations and growth mindset and, you know, all of those things, but not the puku. Mm. And so you think about the answers. I'm like, man, I don't know. I don't know where the saying follow your gut came from, but I reckon it came from our atua, our tūpuna Māori.
Yeah, yeah.
And we have all these things like noho puku, puku riri.
And ata whakarongo.
Yeah.
We ata whakarongo, which I've just learning, you know, is that it's about listening with, and it's actually about listening with your puku first, but also listening with all your senses, because you can listen with your eyes, not just your ears, and all that kind of. I'm finding that kupu at the moment, like, is sticking with me, and I really like want to almost research that particular, because I feel like there's a whole lot of other paths that will come off that. But I believe that it's so true. It's such beautiful kōrero, like,
and what's,
listen to your puku.
What's helped me is you go one step further, and our tūpuna were just absolute experts in personification. And it makes so much sense, right? It's the easiest way to educate anyone about anything is to personify, you know, Papa Tuanuku, the earth mother. I was like, oh, okay. You know, if you don't want people to litter, personify the earth, because there's not many people in this world who, if you said, hey, go and get your mum and lie down over here. Here's a bag of rubbish. Can you tip it on? They're like, no. You know, so it's a really easy way. But you say that the one step further, which again, I'm on my journey. I recognize and acknowledge that element, but don't always lean into it. Sometimes the noise of our world makes it hard for me to attune to. But the next step is thinking about, you know, the seat of our emotions or our feelings or our thoughts in our puku, and then you personify that to tamaroto and hineroto. So you have there's a person in there. So when you're angry, tamaroto's doing the haka. And you know when you're angry, where you feel that, in your puku. When you're a bit mawiwi, when you're a bit sick, you know, you feel that in your puku. When you're anxious, that's tamaroto going, and you feel that in your puku. So, you know, you personify that as that little person who sits in there, and they're alive. They're alive, and they will tell us. They'll tell us what needs to happen, you know.
It's so quiet as well, though. That's what I really think. And we talked about that before, is that you have to sit somehow within the quiet. As you're saying, Timete, you're talking about all the noise that's around us. And then how do you hear that kind of instinctual quiet in your puku, in your gut, without just stepping aside from all of that craziness?
And that's the answer as well. And I used it earlier, and you're on your real journey. But that's the term, noho puku.
Aye.
Noho puku. Like you just pretty much, you know, if we had a dictionary and you had noho puku, you just gave the translation of it, you know. And we can't look at noho puku as a term or an instruction to just give tamariki in the classroom when the teacher needs them to sit and be quiet so I can give you some instructions. Noho puku is way more holistic than that, and you just encapsulated it beautifully. It's sitting within yourself, you know, blocking out that noise and giving yourself the time and space to attune to tamaroto and to hineroto.
It's had a whole lot of like doof doof doofs going on, you know, like the light bulbs going bing 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 bing, because there are whānau that will get up at 4 or 5 in the morning before the sun comes up. And they literally go out into the te ao and they'll sit there, although, and because it is, they say, one of the greatest times to noho puku, and to before the birds, before the manu wake up. And then when the manu wake up is when you know the sun's coming up. But they say that is the greatest time for noho puku, is at that time, just before dawn, before the sun rises. And it's such a beautiful time, I think, for us to do this now in this time of matariki. So
it's before the busyness happens, right? Before everything kind of wakes up, and including ourselves, I think, as well. Like our brains wake up as well as our bodies. And then once that happens, you're like, oh, what am I doing today? I've got to do this and blah, blah, blah. And I think that's going back to, remember I was saying as well, like I've started this walking an hour a day in the morning. And that's part of that. It's like a kind of, it's like a quiet time. Even though I'm physically doing something, it's a very sort of reflective, quiet time to sit in that time before all that stuff happens. Like generally I'm not thinking about what do I have to do today or what am I going to have for dinner. It's even hard to kind of describe what I'm thinking about because I'm just in a different space, you know, before the rest of the world crowds in.
Yeah, and it's really interesting you talk about that. And I haven't begun to practice this, but you've just sort of provoked a memory. And another colleague of ours, Roimata, and she worked really closely with Papareriata to develop this Hautū Waka framework. But one of the landing activities that she ran and that I believe came from him, which makes total sense if you know Papareriata, when she's running these wānanga, is to attune yourself to the environment, which is different to just going for a walk. So, you know, she'd say, oh, everyone get up and just, you know, look outside for 30 seconds and we'd, you know, we'd all look up, stand up and walk away from our screens because we're all on Zoom then, look outside and then come back and she'd go, what did the tree look like? And we're like, what? What shade of green were the leaves? Eh? If you didn't have a tree, What did the grass look like? How long was it? Like, what? Like, it just, like, that level of attunement to our environment can push us and provoke us to really enter into that state of nohopuku, if we want to call it a state. Because we're so, you know, we'll go for a walk and we're not really attuned to, you know, the environment. You know, she said, it's really powerful if you go for your walk. Your first five steps really attune to your environment and have a look. What are those tohu that you're seeing? And because we just, I don't know, it's like we go through life with blinkers on, you know, at the moment. So it's,
and also we are, like, the built world is one part, and it seems such a dominant part of our life, especially now with the internet and devices in our pockets, right? But actually it's nature that we come from and we go back to. So it's like that is what is going to be fulfilling us, right?
And I think it's connection. Easy for us to, like, put our iPod, to put your pods in, to be listening to something, when really sometimes we just need to take them out. Because sunrises are the most beautiful. I've been watching sunrises and just the cloud formations and the colours in the sky and the colours that come up. It's just like, it's, you miss it. If you're not seeing it.
If you're sleeping.
You miss it.
Although sometimes we're not going to just sleeping though, because sometimes you need to just sleep.
That's right.
Yeah.
How do you, Tamete, and amongst your beautiful kōrero and all that you've shared with us, what is it, or how do you look after you? How do you take care of your haora, your waiora, your oranga? You know, how do you take care of you?
I think I'm on that journey. It really, locking in what that is. I've sort of already alluded to it a couple of times now. It's finding time to explicitly lean into some of those things that I already know, or deepening my understanding of those things that I know that originate from my culture, my heritage, my identity, my language. And sometimes even just learning more about some of those things is enough to provide some spiritual sustenance, you know. So it might not necessarily be doing karakia, but it might be learning more about karakia, and that, and I know that contributes to my well-being. And the other thing is, and I think this is true of our tūpuna as well, we have different labels for it these days, like, you know, circle of influence, for example, but it's really leaning into my circle of influence. Those that really love and care for me, whether that be whānau, partner, tamariki, friends, colleagues. And I'm still not as good as I would like to be, but it's really leaning into them, and leaning into them early. I reflect on some of the life challenges or life situations that I've encountered. You know, sometimes it circles all the way back to the very first thing, you know, being a leader. You know, I don't call myself a leader, but so many others will place that label on me. I'm like, oh, well, that must mean I can deal with this life situation or challenge because I'm a leader. And then it's not until it's too late, like, oh, actually, I need to talk to someone here. I need to get this off my chest, or I need to bounce some ideas off, or I need to get some a different perspective. So really leaning into those people early. Sometimes that's hard. You know, I was talking to Marka before we started about Māori men crying.
Yes.
You know, and it's, I feel like we're breaking that stereotype now. When I was growing up, that stereotype was very prevalent. And if you're a Māori man, you don't cry. You don't talk about your feelings and your emotions. So doing that earlier is definitely something I know that works for me, but I need to do it earlier. I always remind myself and others, if your toilet's blocked, you don't wait until it's overflowing with tiko and mimi to then ring the plumber. As soon as it's a little bit blocked, you ring the plumber straight away.
Yeah, because you know it's going to get bigger, right?
Yeah.
So before it gets bigger.
Yeah. And ring the plumber.
Yeah.
I mean, different if you are a plumber. Maybe you can
ring another plumber, maybe.
Ring another plumber, you know. But maybe we'll change analogy to, I don't know, you need an electrician, but
yeah,
you need that person. Just you gotta reach out, you gotta lean in. And that's, you know, urbanization, all of these things have disconnected us from our our communities, our hapori, our iwi, mm. our hapu, our pā.
Mm.
But, you know, there's so many whakatauki that articulate unity and the success of all and all of that sort of stuff. And that all comes from when we all did live together like that. And we were an ecosystem of hauora. We weren't mm-hmm. individuals who were trying to seek a sense of hauora. You know, mm-hmm. the hauora was of the collective.
Mm.
And so I can imagine them leaning into each other all the time,
yeah.
right then and there. I got a challenge, bang, I go to my tohunga, I go to my rangatira, I go to my hoa, I go to my auntie or whatever, you know, over the generations, that's sort of one of the elements that's been severed. So trying to reclaim that, I think, will be helpful for me.
I think it's that value of communal living, and it is reminding me of a friend I was talking to who was a Syrian, and he was saying before he came to New Zealand when he was 28, he'd never lived on his own.
Mm.
You know, so there were always whānau in the house. They shared everything, you know, everything was done just collectively. So there was always someone there to talk through what you were trying to find a solution for, you know, what the answers were, what you were struggling with, always there some to celebrate with you and how different that would be in whānau that are living in collective houses or collective dwellings or even villages together, that they're just automatically, that's right there. And and you don't always have to take the responsibility to seek it out yourself, because someone will see, hey, Tamiti, you look like you've had a tough day. Like, what's happening? You know, there's someone there. And I think there's that power in hanging out with those people who we love, because they recognise that often, I think, before us when we're in periods of stress or turmoil or whatever it is, they can just look at you and know, oh, something's up. And then, you know, help you work through that.
Mm.
You just spoke about whakatauki. I was just wondering if it would be beautiful to close off with a whakatauki and to have you share a whakatauki that you believe encompasses, you know, the kōrero that you've shared with us today and that kind of collective and community way of living and being. So, yeah.
It's, I've got one that's just popped into my head. It maybe doesn't encapsulate exactly that community living, but I think it encapsulates where I am and where I feel many Māori enablers or leaders, if you want to use your word. And it leans into what you were just saying, Rochelle, about sometimes other people can ask, but we still have a responsibility to be open and honest and transparent, because it's really easy to, oh, how are you going, bro? You look a bit tired. Oh, no, I'm all good.
I'm fine.
Yeah, yeah.
So fine.
It's classic. It's classic. I do that all the time. And then I sit back and go, why did I say that? And then a little bit more time goes by and it's like, oh, I feel like my window of opportunity to say, actually, I'm not okay, is gone. And so then I just move on. Hoiano. The whakatauki is he kokona whare e kitea. He kokona ngākau e kore e kitea. And it circles all the way back to what I was saying, where it's quite easy to see some of the physical ailments. You can see when someone's physically not well, but you can't always see when they're emotionally unwell. So he kokona whare e kitea, it's easy to see the corners of the house. Ngā kokona te ngākau e kore e kitea, but it's really hard to see the corners of the heart. So if you've got a building that's falling down and the paint's flaking off and there's some rot on the weatherboards and the drafts coming under the door, it's easy to see that. But it's really hard to see that if the corners of the heart are starting to rot or have flaky paint or there's drafts coming in that whare. And so I think, you know, my journey is recognizing that I have a responsibility as well to make sure that I allow others to see the corners of my heart. And that's really hard, because that's a really vulnerable space to be, particularly if people are calling you a community leader. You know, I think about, and there's some pretty amazing, you know, whina kupa and te puiahe rangi. You know, so you think, oh yeah, whina kupa is amazing. But who was whina kupa's whina kupa?
Yes.
Who was te puiahe rangi's te puiahe rangi?
Yes.
You know, who was honeheke's honeheke?
Yes.
In other parts of the world, you know, who was Nelson Mandela's Nelson Mandela?
Mm.
Who was Mother Teresa's Mother Teresa?
Mm.
You know, we don't always hear those stories, which I think could be really powerful in shifting the mental model that particularly Māori leaders, it's either placed, like I said at the very beginning, it's a combination of extrinsically and intrinsically, you know, the pressure that we feel is put on us and then the pressure we put on ourselves, and finding that other person to lean into. So, yeah.
Oh, kia ora koutou. We've just finished our podcast with Te Mete Lohmann. Oh, man. He was a joy. I couldn't believe he cried in the first 3 minutes. Well, I could actually, and then we both ended up crying. But just
bound to happen. Come on.
Just really beautiful to hear his kōrero and so rich from a te reo Māori and te ao Māori perspective. So, and yeah, I really, really resonated with so much of what he shared with us. Yeah.
I think there's a power as well of taking this time to reflect on that sense of responsibility of feeling for your own people and the things that you want to change for those people that you are passionate about. I think there's a weight in there. There's also a joy in there because there's a real privilege in being able to see it and pull some levers to enact change, to make things better and help those people on their journey. And it's amazing for me how often that's come out in the different podcasts that we've done with different people, where they feel that sense of responsibility and the weight of that, but also they feel this incredible resonance. And I loved how we talked a lot with him about sitting in your puku.
Yeah, I loved
it. I loved that a lot.
Noho puku. Yeah. It was really an awesome kōrero.
Talking about just sitting and feeling it and knowing it and instinctually making your decisions versus your head or your heart. You've been listening to Tātou Tātou, a podcast about kaitiaki kōrero and our wellbeing hauora. You can find us online at huie.org.nz/tātou tātou. That's huie.org.nz/tātou tātou. You can find me online, Rochelle Stewart Allen, at theNGOcoach.com.
Oh, and you can find Tuihana Oi here at www.wewellbeing.co.nz. Or check out I Am Tuihana on Instagram. Kia ora.
Tātou Tātou is brought to you by Huie Community Aotearoa, Volunteering New Zealand, Centre for Social Impact, and Wu Wellbeing.